live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I love when I bring back guests, but I really think this has been the exciting story. I had a great two-part interview with Rashad Jennings last year, and I was rooting him on playing for the Raiders, even though I'm a huge Denver Bronco fan. And then me, who's so busy, didn't check to see what was going on with him. And then lo and behold, I go on Wikipedia, which we don't always trust Wikipedia, and said he signed a big contract with the Giants. So now I'd like to welcome the program former Pitt Panther, because I always will say that because he played for Pitt at least 1 year, and now New York Giant NFL star Rashad Jennings. Rashad, how are you, man?
I'm great, man. I'm great. Excellent. I appreciate you having me back on.
Absolutely. And it's so great that we stayed connected. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to email him. And I said, let's see what happens. And I had no idea, but I just thought you were such a humble man, your story. If people can go back and listen to that and see that, we were able to tell that story the first episode of the interview, and then went to your foundation, and to see the success of continuing to play well when you get the opportunity. And now with the Giants, you got to be so thrilled with signing that contract, aren't you?
Yeah, for so many reasons, I'm thrilled. It's an honor and it's a privilege to play this game. Nobody's forcing us to do it, so I never take it for granted. Being that little kid that had to overcome a lot, the chubby, overweight, asthma, glasses, 0.6 GPA average at one point in time, and had a transition, like all those type of emotions come back to every level of achievement. I never forget where I came from. So, I'm at a point where I'm getting in my prime later in my career. I'm a late bloomer in every aspect of my life. So I'm excited where I'm at. I'm thrilled to be a Giant and be under the leadership of Tom Coughlin, and to get to be in the Mecca city of New York.
Yeah, the New York media and everything that's involved, and what's so great about your career, when you look at your NFL career, you are always playing well. There was not a time when you were not excelling on the field. You just haven't gotten the opportunity. And now, as we were talking, this is the year, right, man? This is the year that you're going to get that opportunity to really show what you can do on a regular basis as a running back.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. For me personally, I see it as the same opportunity I do every single year. Nothing's changing in the way I'm preparing. Nothing's changing in the way that I'm training. Nothing's changing in my mental preparation. Because if it were, that means that I wasn't taking advantage of every opportunity I had beforehand. So, I never take, every time I put on my cleats, tie my shoes, buckle my helmet, I never take it for granted. So, I'm keeping business as is and seeing how I can help this team.
Exactly. And you're going to definitely be, I'm going to be a Giants fan now. And it's very interesting. I interviewed an author that talked about the history of the Giants. And it looks like historically, when they have a bad season, they come back strong. And Tom Coughlin, wouldn't it be great if you could end up winning a Super Bowl with Tom as one of his last years coaching? So you're with a coaching legend and giant in Tom Coughlin, and you're really going to have great leadership with a great quarterback in Manning. And an unbelievable organization to be part of, for sure.
No question about it. Tom Coughlin is one of the best. He's going to go down that way in history. And like I said, to be under his leadership is tremendous. To be with a franchise quarterback would be my first time. And so, all the obligations and things that go along with that, I'm thrilled.
Okay, so let's talk now about the foundation. And again, that's one of your most favorite things to do. What's the news from the foundation from last year to this year? Where have you gone in the last year?
Yeah, so this year, we're still building. We're still continuing to grow. And this year, one of the things, the events that we're having is July 12th. In Lynchburg, Virginia. We're having a camp for 200 kids. The ages are 10 years and older. And the focus is preparing youth on and off the football field because it's a And when we talk about on and off the field, there's two spectrums of it that kind of intertwine. And, you know, being an athlete and also, you know, being somebody who's business oriented, who's a family man, who's a lot of other things other than football. Football doesn't define who I am. You know, I step back and look at my life and I look at, you know, a lot of things that you have to overcome, that you have to prioritize. And so it's kind of going back to give some of the secrets of the trade and the truth in the business beyond media to these kids.
And I think that's so key that a lot of them just think football is it. And this is where education is an important thing, Rashad, which you talked about before on our program. I guess preparedness, how you are, how you represent yourself. Are you a polite person? Are you, when you enter a room, are you looking them in the eye? Are you shaking their hand? Are you organized? And all those things are part of preparing for life.
Yeah, being punctual is a lot of it. And knowing why you should be is a bigger part of it. I think when a kid understands the why more so than the what he's doing, things start to fall into place. They can start to take ownership more so than being robotic of what's being asked of them.
So key and all that stuff. So how do you set up each day at the camp? They show up and they you work on football skills, or is it kind of set up with different meetings and different things? Kind of explain that for our listeners.
Yeah, so the first day we'll have registration. And some of the guys, we'll ring in it myself, a couple other NFL guys that are local and across the league, and also I'm bringing in both my brothers play football in the NFL for several years. I'm bringing in a few coaches that won state championships, some other guys that are ex-retired track stars. Like, I'm bringing in tons of different talents, tons of different minds that want to give back. The Tim Tebow Foundation is going to bring out some volunteers to help. It's going to be big. It's going to be fun. And the registration, we'll start off with the registration. After registration, we'll have a quick introduction of why we're having the camp, what it's for. The kids are getting into their stretch lines. They're getting with their individual coaches. We're going to do a mock combine. We're going to train them, push them. They're going to have a snack lunch break. Get back into the grind. We'll have a little punt, pass, and kick, and then a 7-on-7. And then we'll have, which is the most important thing at the end of it, a Q&A, where we're going to have a panel of guys that these kids will, like I said, be able to remove media, to be able to remove the television, and actually be intimate with the people on the panel that are in the position in which these kids aspire to be at. So we get to be open and candid and tell the truth about what it is they need to overcome, the sacrifices that we made to get where we're at, and not necessarily to follow us 100%, but to mimic, you know. And I think it's important to kind of expose yourself when you're on a professional platform to give as much back mentally to another child and kind of pass on a new level of common sense to the next generation.
So, Rashad, kind of explain specifically who else will be there. What other NFL players are going to be there for the Q&A?
Yeah, Mike Brown plays Jacksonville Jaguars receiver. We have Mike Cox, running back with the New York Giants. Chris Summers, he plays receiver with the Buffalo Bills. We'll think David Wilson, running back with the Giants, and so it's we're going to have a surprise few more that may be coming in. So, and also, like I said, my two older brothers, Butch Jennings and Brian Jennings, both played in the NFL for a while, and again, a couple coaches that all won state championships.
I didn't know when we were talking. I don't think you told me your brothers played NFL. I thought you were because you said they were always ahead of you, and then you overachieved. So where do they play in the NFL, your brothers?
Yeah, so I was the whoops, here we go again type of baby. My brothers are 10 and 13 years older than me. And I remember my mom said she went to the doctor, wasn't feeling well, and they told her she was pregnant, and they looked and said, how did that happen? So I was the unexpected. But, yeah, they're 10 and 13 years older than me. Butch Jennings He graduated from Liberty University, went on to play with the Giants, and my other brother, Brian Jennings, parade All-American, went to Virginia Tech. He then went and played with the Patriots, the Chargers, and the Titans.
Interesting. Okay, so, and you were the one that didn't expect to play NFL, and you're going to be the one that might overachieve in compared to them. So, but I guess the humble person you are, you're like, okay, guys, you know, you always were telling me to keep trying and keep going. Would you say your brothers were great role models to help you keep going to achieve where you're at today?
There's no question about it. If I didn't have my brothers in my life, it's just no telling where I would have be at. And they never tried to change who I was. They just trying to kind of channel all of my energy in the right direction. And, you know, no, it never was forcing me to play football. You know, everybody wanted me to do something else. But I had a heart to play running back. And, you know, they motivated me and gave me the tools to fix all the problems that life was going to give me.
And the guys that you're having at the camp are just like you, ones that know you've made mistakes in life. We talked about some of the mistakes you made, Rashad, on the show last time. But and also the things that you would have done differently. And to explain specifically when you're in a position of opportunity to grasp it and go after it. And do you believe that the NFL is more than just talent, that you have to be able to be a team player? You have to be able to get around, get along with the organization, with ownership. And those are the ones that stay a long career in this sport, because if you have a bad rap, a lot of teams are going to slowly but surely weed you out of the system, aren't they?
Yeah, there is. There's no question about it. You know, and I hear a lot of times people say, you know, football is a business, and a majority of time is used in the context of describing some type of discretion of money. But when people also say that it's a business, it means a lot more than that. How you carry yourself, how you communicate, you know, what you stand for, your brand as a person, those things matter inside of any business. And you do have to carry yourself as a professional. There's no question about it. That's why you're titled a professional. So those type of things make a drastic difference. And, you know, more importantly, it comes down to the morality of a person, of an individual. You know, I personally I'm accountable to something bigger than any human can actually put against me. So that's what truly keeps me grounded, not the paycheck or not, you know, whether somebody's going to judge me a certain way. I'm accountable to something bigger.
Well, Rashad, I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but it's my show. I really believe, and one thing I've been very blessed to be part of after we did our interview is the insightful players, and they are fantastic NFL players that are more than just how they play on the field, but also what they do in the community. And there are a lot of great guys I've worked with and talked to and interviewed. I think you would be perfect for it, and I had to just say it on the air because I'm going to put it out there that you and Chrissy Carew need to talk sometime, because I really believe, Coach Carew, that you are an insightful player. You are the kind of player that she looks for, that works so hard in the community, is so humble, and truly sees the mistakes that you've made in your life, and yet you strive through those hard adversities to where you are today with the opportunity with the Giants. So I don't know if you ever heard of the Insightful Player Series, but I'll text you it, because I'm telling you, Rashad, it's absolutely a great group of men and then in the NFL that are just tremendous role models for the community, for sure.
I would love to know more about it, and definitely send that contact over.
I definitely will. But Rashad, I'm so excited for you. You don't understand. Now, when you come to Pittsburgh, we have to meet. No doubt. We have to meet when you come to Pittsburgh, for sure. When you're ever out in Pittsburgh area, please text me or email me. We definitely want to, I want to meet you, and you're my favorite NFL running back now, because I've been rooting you on, and I'm excited to see you, especially if you're in the NFC. I'm a Bronco fan. So you're away from my from the Raiders now, so definitely, unless you play the Steelers or Broncos, that'll be my only torn situation. But and again, former Panther for 1 year, I'll always say that for sure, because hail the Pit. But where can we find information on you, Rashad, your camp and your foundation, and learn more about you? Where can we go?
Yeah, So, yeah, I'm lucky. I guess there's not that many Rashad Jennings running around. So my Twitter is at Rashad Jennings, no underscores. My Facebook is Rashad Jennings, no underscores. My Instagram is Rashad Jennings, no underscores. And the foundation is RashadJenningsFoundation.com. And my personal website is RashadJennings.com. So if you forget, just type in Rashad Jennings to any of the social medias, and you will find me.
All right, Rashad, I'm counting on you winning the rushing title and being an All-Pro next. Okay, so I'm going to put it out there now. You get enough snaps, you're going to do it because you're a hard worker, and that would be a tremendous story. And especially when we talked about the Jacksonville story and the Raiders story. So thanks again for calling, and best of luck. And then when you're looking to promote events in Pittsburgh, please reach out to me. But we'll stay in touch. I'm sure that I get all the emails of what's happening with the foundation through your team. So thanks again for calling, man.
I really appreciate it. I thank God for allowing me to do this.
All right. Take care, Rashad. See ya.
All right.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network again, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And really excited about this guest from the Discovery Channel. So I'm so excited to welcome to the program, James Sanzik from Dukes of Hagel. And I'm really interested in hearing about the show. James, thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
It's got to be interesting. Did you ever think that you'd be a reality television star, and especially an international star?
Actually, no, I did not, sir. It all came as quite a shock and a big surprise, but it was nice. I mean, it's been fun.
It's got to be fun because it's like you got to be blown away in so many aspects about where you've come from the beginning and where you're going and stuff like that. So tell us specifically how this show came about, Dukes of Hagel.
Dukes of Hagel came about, it kind of came about in an odd way. I met some producers from a show while I was down in Louisiana. I owned a little golf course. And they were coming out to the golf course. They were filming another show, which I'm not going to say the name of it because I don't know if I'm allowed to, but they were down there filming. And while I was at my place, my friend Nikki and I, who's on the show with me, what we were doing is we were restoring a lot of, like, boats and cars and tractors and all kinds of different things, and we were flipping them and selling them at the auction in town. And they just, it was like moths to a fire. They just were, like, so interested in what we were doing. 6 months later, they were asking us to do a show about it. So we said, yeah, we'd love to do it. So that's how it all started, to be honest.
Well, what's interesting when you talk about the premise of your show, first of all, the area you're located in, I think that changes a lot of the process of this, for sure, because the area you're located in, Appalachia, you know for a fact that specifically it's not the wealthiest of areas. So, you know, bartering has happened on a regular basis all over the U.S. and all over the world, thanks to our great economy. But for when you do bartering, it's a much more interesting story, I guess, than the average barter, for sure, because of the location and stuff. Wouldn't you agree?
The location's great. There's so many cool things up in the mountains that you can find as far as, like, historical items. You'd be just shocked. You know, everywhere you look up there, there's something cool in somebody's yard. And if you can work a deal out with them and find something that they want, you can go ahead and make a deal with them and get it. Get the item, restore it, fix it back up, and then take it to auction and see if you can make some money. Plus, it's like we're saving history, too, a lot. And I like that because some of the items that we find are just so unique, you don't run across them. And I might not run across them ever again in my life.
And when you look at, I guess, the opening of your show and stuff like that, you're not the average day person that we're going to see in downtown New York or L.A., right?
No, I would stick out like a sore thumb in downtown L.A. or New York, I'm pretty sure.
So that brings the whole character thing. Now, what have people said about the show specifically when it aired in the States and stuff that you were surprised about, especially when it finally came out? Questions, different things. People knew you in your area, but especially, I guess, going about town and being a television star, and how did the locals react to your show?
Well, the local reaction to the show has been great because in North Carolina, while we were filming, we brought all the locals into the scene with us. All the local people that we were dealing with anyway we brought them on the show because they're just as big a part of that whole environment as we are. You know, we were kind of in a situation where, like, okay, I know these guys are great barterers. I know these guys are great to deal with. Let's get these people on the show. In one of our episodes, it shows us bartering, Nikki and I bartering, and the gentleman's name is Nader. If you notice it in the show, he's actually the person that the character from Cars, Tow Mater, that it was based on. And we brought him onto our show because he did the voice with Larry the Cable Guy for all the stuff on Cars.
Wow. Oh, really? That's interesting. So basically, it wasn't just Larry the Cable Guy that did Nader's voice. Explain that.
Well, Nader did other parts, but the character that Larry the Cable Guy was playing is actually this gentleman that we had on our show, and he is a riot.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting in so many ways to have somebody out there that through that story. So that it goes really into the country backwoodsman type of environment. So picture an average day on this show. So our listeners out there that have not checked out Dukes of Haggle, you can go to Discovery and Google Dukes of Haggle as I was about to watch some of the episodes. You can watch them right from there, right? Am I correct?
Correct. They have stuff on there. I think you can also find them online. I'm not sure if there's any YouTube.
Netflix? Are they on Netflix yet? The episodes?
I believe you can pick it up on Netflix. I'm not sure. It's so new right now that we're not even sure of our schedule. It's like they'll call us and tell us, okay, you're going to be on in a week.
Oh,
so then I try to spread the word through Twitter, via Twitter, and everywhere else as fast as I can to try to get some people out there to watch it. What's amazing to me is the fact that, you know, these other markets overseas where they're showing us right now, I'm getting tremendous response on Twitter, from people in the Netherlands. Japan is about to explode for us. It sounds like, Discovery's Turbo channel that was in Japan is now going to be Discovery's D-Max channel. And as of July 7th, I believe Dukes of Haggle is going to be one of the headline shows on what they call Money Mondays, which shows people making money in different kinds of odd ways. There's going to be several different shows that are featured, people like Pawn Star type shows, shows like ours, of people making money in different ways, out of the box thinking.
Educating people in other countries of what you guys do, for sure. So give us the life and the day of an episode. Give us like a kind of a summary of one episode so that we can understand specifically what makes this show so attractive to Discovery and attractive to the world.
Well, I'll tell you what makes it I'm not sure about Discovery or the world, but what made it attractive to me was it was unscripted. They just basically let us run with it. So they weren't attempting to tell us what to do or projects to do or any of that kind of stuff. They just basically said, look, we're just going to follow you around with the camera. We're going to let you guys do your thing. We're going to film it, and then we're going to edit it up to the way that we think it's going to look good, which worked out really well for us because we got to break the first law of television, which is we got to acknowledge the camera on the program. So there's actually times where we're doing things where we're telling the camera people, hey, you know, you need to back up because if this thing goes wrong, I need to be able to get out of the way before I lose a hand or something. And if you're standing behind me too close with that camera, I'm going to take you out too.
So in a lot of ways, you basically had free reign. So of the other characters on the show that are going to come on, hopefully in August, we'll have the whole crew on, especially when I start to watch a couple episodes or at least parts of episodes. What you guys remind me of, and I look at the pictures, a bunch of backwoodsmen. Don't mind me on this, James, because I was a former pro wrestler, so you can find dirt on me when I had the long hair, beard, and everything and say, Neil, what are you saying?
Don't worry about it.
You know, I was a star in North Carolina, especially I forget some of the great, good friend of mine, Scotty McKeever, was a big star in North Carolina, and I've worked a lot, Ashton, North Carolina, worked a bunch of different little towns in North Carolina. I think Asheville, I forget all the towns in North Carolina for sure, but basically, you guys look like a mixture of other reality shows for sure, but the long beards some of you have, the ways where I don't think I'd want to be in the woods and get caught where you're at, James, because you guys are going to have, you're definitely not going to be unarmed in where you're at. So just looking at that opener and looking at the picture of all you guys, you're definitely a cast of characters, and you're really speaking very professionally, very gentlemanly, and I'm like, I'm trying to get dirt out on James, and I know my good friend Justin would be laughing about, Justin Tranchito would be laughing right now, saying, Neil's just trying to get dirt on him, and yeah, he's poking and poking, and James is not throwing his cast under the bus, but I understand.
I love the cast. Yeah, this cast was the best cast that you could possibly want to work with, because none of us are actors. We're all just regular guys that ended up in a very odd situation for us, and we handled it as best as we could, and I think we handled it really well. Gene and Robert, Andy and Fred, Ron, myself and Nikki, my partner Nikki on the show, none of us have ever done anything like this before. I mean, this is a bunch of guys that just normally do their thing on their own, and we're highly competitive with each other, don't get me wrong. We give each other a lot of grief, but at the end of the day, nobody's throwing anybody under the bus because we're trying to keep each other from being under the bus.
So
it was a great experience.
And you're a Detroit guy, James, so you're really out of place.
Yeah,
and you're really out of place compared to the rest, right? A lot of them are born and raised in North Carolina, right?
Yeah, most of the people there are backwoods country guys. But you got to understand, I grew up in Detroit, but I got out of Detroit early. I graduated from high school, and I left in 1986. I went down to Louisiana, and I spent many years in Louisiana, and I spent many years in North Carolina, going back and forth. My ex-wife was from Louisiana. My kids were born there. So I had, you know, a 16-year run down in Louisiana, and anything that I didn't know about the woods, or I didn't know there was that much grass in the world until I moved from Detroit to Louisiana.
So that's gotta be such a challenge, a culture shock when you're talking Detroit to Louisiana.
Yeah, it was quite the culture shock, but I loved it. You know, I love to go hunting. I love to go fishing. I like to be in the woods. I like to, you know, I just love that kind of lifestyle, and I just ran with it, and I've continued to run with it. I mean, you can't look back. My friends call me Detroit Redneck, which I love, because, you know, it doesn't sound like it would work in a sentence, but everybody I know is like, yeah, you're the Detroit Redneck, and that's fine with me.
So let's kind of talk about places you would barter things, okay? I think I have a lot of things to barter. For example, James, all my authors send me thousands and thousands upon a books. If I need to go drive and meet you and say, hey, let's try to figure out ways we can barter books, I don't know if that would be a huge thing with all the flea markets and the different places you go at. But I think bartering's so interesting. That show, and I won't mention any of your competitors, trust me, but those shows out there that talk about bartering, and then you got the Green Apples of the world and the different places where businesses are bartering with other businesses and things like that. What makes your bartering different?
Ours is real down to earth. The stuff that we do it's more people oriented. It's more about the people than it is about the objects. Sometimes we'll go out to barter something, and I'll have more fun dealing with the people than actually doing the deal.
Right.
Because you get to meet the most interesting people, and you build up these friendships, and then down the line, it's just incredible, these people that you meet. It's really hard to describe the camaraderie you get with these people after a while. You know, after a while, they'll start calling you first. Hey, look, I got this great thing that I just found. You know, I want you to come look at it. Building up the trust with these people and making sure that you do right on the deals and that everybody's happy is the most important thing. Well, nobody's out there trying to make a huge profit off of somebody. We're just out there trying to make a living.
So give us an example of one of the shows, one thing you try to barter to try to get something else to keep making some sort of money so you could sell stuff. What types of stuff did you barter?
On this show, we bartered all different kinds of things. One particular thing is my friend Kelly has this thing called the Cooter Hole Party, which is this big party up in North Carolina. And he's got a lot of property. He's got this big bar in a barn built out in the middle of nowhere on his property. And every year, a couple thousand people show up for this big party. Well, we were there the year before last, and Kelly needed some items for his party. He was complaining. He didn't have enough lights. He didn't have enough electricity out there. So last year, we showed up there with items that I knew that he would need. Lights, a generator, drumsticks, just a bunch of different items that I knew he would need for his party. And he had an old Vendo 39 spin top Coke machine there that I wanted bad. So that's what we ended up ordering for, and I got it, and you could see it on one of the episodes. I think it's Cages and Cooters is the episode that one's going to be on.
And so do you just keep the stuff or you sell it? You said your business is what, James?
We restored it. I take it. I have a friend of mine that has a museum in North Carolina, a Coke machine museum. We took it there. He found the parts that I needed for it, and some of the stuff I fabricated myself. Took it into the shop, cleaned it all up, repainted it back to original condition. Took it to the auction and sold it for, like, I think we got $4,100 for it.
So you definitely, this is your, so let's say you had no TV show. How do you make your living, James? Through bartering, pretty much, or you, or also?
Right now, I am, Neil, right now I'm sitting in Key West, Florida. I've been here for about 5 months, and since I've been here, I have bought and restored and sold 9 sailboats since I've been here.
So do you kind of consider yourself almost a kind of person who kind of wanders from place to place in certain ways? Because that's different than, I don't think you were doing sailboats in Dukes of Haggle for sure. No, right?
I kind of bounce around. I have a lot of friends down here. I decided that, you know, I worked for a year and a half on the show very hard, every day, you know, 12 to 16 hours a day on the show. And I decided to come down for vacation here, and I stayed. And while I was here, I picked up a few sailboats, and I fixed them, and I started selling them. And I thought, you know, this is a great thing for me to do for a while. So I'm going to hang out here and keep on doing some sailboats for a while until, you know, if Discovery Channel calls and they want us back up in North Carolina, then I'll go right back up to North Carolina. I still have a shop in North Carolina.
Interesting. Who's running your shop?
One of my friends that was on the show with us is taking care of it for me right now. I had about 60 items in there that were already restored, and he's just selling them for me. I'm giving him a little cut of the money, and he's putting the rest of it in the bank for me.
So is he have you gotten more business thanks to the show? Have people come to visit saying, I want to just be part of where James has his shop? Was that something that...
Yeah. The business has definitely increased as far as that goes, but what also has increased is people. I have notebooks full of things that people come to me. Hey, you got to come look in my garage. I've got this in my garage, or I've got this in my shed, or I've got this in my barn. So it seemed like people are coming out of the woodwork with new items for me to look at. I mean, to the point where I filled up several notebooks with notes, phone numbers, and contacts. So if we film again next season, I will have a ton of stuff to go look at.
Interesting. So let's get. I have tons of stuff I could barter in my studio right now. I have tons of things that guests have sent me. People sending me free product that has not gone bad. What is your recommendation for me to go out and barter? I know, you know, you check these Craigslists of the world, and they're kind of not dangerous, but yet they really don't have anything good to offer. How do I go out and barter maybe some of all my books I have, or barter some of this product?
You actually have to go out there and do a lot of legwork. I mean, I would, if I had a ton of books or something, I would go to bookshops and say, look, I've got, you know, several thousand books. You know, I'd either like to barter them for something that you may have that I'd like, or sell them to you and use that money to go get something I like. I mean, it's just a matter of being out there enough. And after a while, people start coming to you, which is really the cool thing. Is once they realize what's going on, they'll come to you with items, you know. They'll come to you with requests. Hey, I need books, or I need this, or I need that. Can you keep an eye out for it while you're out there looking?
What is your call about bartering services? Do you look at, if you were bartering services, again, our expert James from Dukes of Haggle is kind of giving me some expertise on bartering before the interview's over. Do you think it's smart when you're bartering services to take the hours that you know aren't going to get filled in your business to try to utilize that to barter after you're filled and everything else? You don't want to take your prime hours away from yourself, right, in business as an entrepreneur.
No, you don't. You definitely don't. I mean, not only are you bartering for items, but then again, you have to restore these items also. So you have to figure out how much time am I going to have to put into a certain item? How much time am I going to have to do, you know, to get this to the point where I can resell it? So you have to kind of really be careful with your time. And you have to, I've made some serious mistakes before.
You're right. And what about services? Services, I meant like my job as a tutor. If I decide to try to go and barter hours of tutoring or borrow hours of producing and editing and doing certain things, I want to make sure those hours are not taking up my prime hours, right? That's what I was asking a barterer like you. So haggling to the time where you know you're not going to lose this money and it's going to help benefit you, you jump on it, right? If it's not a win-win, that's where the mistakes you made, right? You bartered certain things thinking, hey, I'm going to make a ton off this, and then you're stuck with it in your house, right?
Exactly. And the funny thing is some of the items that you do barter for, that you think that, okay, this is going to take me a long time to sell this, but yet this other item, it should go right away. It always reverses. The things that you think won't sell right away are the things that always seem to sell. And the things that you think are definite money right off the bat are the ones that are sometimes harder to sell.
So let's...
It just depends.
Let's go ahead, book you again next month, but we're going to kind of touch base on Twitter. Let's get the whole crew on and like do a campaign for Europe, because my show is internationally syndicated, so we are on in Europe. Let's kind of market some of the European towns that the show airs on and talk up the show for those areas, and then maybe they'll have a rerun in the United States. So where can we find information on you, James, and learn more about you, man? But I want to have the whole crew on, learn about them all, yeah.
You can find me basically on Twitter at James Sanzik on Twitter, and I'll answer any questions online anybody sends to me. I don't mind one bit. You can Google Jimmy Sanzik, or you can Google Dukes of Haggle, or you can go to hashtag Dukes of Haggle on Twitter, and you can get a hold of me that way. But there's a lot of information about the show right now that's just coming out if you Google the show. If you Google Dukes of Haggle, you'll see the items from Discovery D-Max that we're going to be headlining in Asia, that we're going to be one of the headline shows on this Money Mondays that they're going to be doing in Asia. Tuesdays they're doing like Fast Cars, so they're going to have like Fast and Loud and a bunch of these different programs on. But each day they're going to have a different theme.
That's fantastic. So did it air in the States, James, or did air in the States, your show?
It just aired last Tuesday, and Justin's program actually Game of Problems aired at the same time. It aired four episodes, and ours aired four episodes last Tuesday on Destination America Channel. And from what I understand, it's going to be put in the lineup here shortly, and the whole season will start to play. But right now, our seasons are in full force playing overseas.
Okay, here's the question. So I was confused because Justin had a season play in the States. You never did.
No, our full season was not played yet. In October, they played episode 1 and 2. Then they repeated again in June.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Episode 1 and 2. And then this past month, they played episode 3, 4, 5, and 6. And now they're talking about going ahead and doing like mini marathons and just starting to play us like in 5 or 6 episode segments. You know, 3 or 4 times a week.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to definitely have the whole crew back on. So we're going to reach out on Twitter and promote the show completely. I want to learn a little bit more so I can ask questions about each one of the characters. We'll run a bunch of different things out and see how I can help you out, man. I hope for sure that the show continues to stay on the air. But anybody else that's a producer out there and that are reality producers and say, you know, if Discovery makes a mistake and doesn't let them keep going, you got some talented people out there that are very interesting that would be a really entertaining entertaining show on television. So keep up the great work, James, and thanks again for calling, man.
I'm gonna keep plugging it. Discovery Channel's been great to us. Destination Mess has been great to us. I love the fact that things are working out the way they are. From what I understand, the way things work with these shows is they put them out in different markets, they test the ratings, and if the ratings go good, they increase them and they bring them back into the United States and they play them full time, and that's at the point we're at right now. Right now they're beginning to really see something in the program, and I'm hoping that they continue to give us good airtime and people like it.
All right,
great. You can watch this as a kid.
Well, I'm.
You know, there's not violence or anything like that. There's a little bit of cursing here and there, but not too bad.
Hey, there's more cursing in wrestling. So good talking to you, James. Best of luck, man, brother. And we'll stay in touch, okay?
Okay. Hey, thank you very much, Neil.
All right, take care. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Radio Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And always the celebrity show is very interesting. And it's always interesting to get with certain celebrities and certain projects that are going on. And also some education products. So I'm so excited to welcome the program Walt Willie from All My Children and much, much more. Walt, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, Walt. Give us a little bit of your background in your career, and then we're going to get right into specifically what projects are going on with you right now.
Well, gosh, I moved to New York from Southern Illinois, and I guess it was 1980-81, to chase a dream of being a professional actor. Got out there and did what most people do, pound the pavement, pick up an issue of Backstage every Thursday and go on as many auditions as you can get to while trying to make a living that you could actually live in New York. I was very lucky. I had my first soap contract in 1985 on Another World. Thing Rains and I were hired to play hitmen on that show. I went from there to Ryan's Hope in 86, I believe, and then in 87, started on All My Children, spent 25 years there. I was Jackson Montgomery on All My Children longer than James Arness was Matt Dillon on Gunsmoke, so I felt good about that. Branched out during the time on All My Children and since to do a lot of other things. I'm currently touring with the one-man show that I wrote and performed about Wild Bill Hickok, called Wild Bill, an evening with James Butler Hickok. I have a new series premiering on the American Hero Channel this month. So, been a pretty busy time.
Well, it seems like you're definitely keeping busy in so many ways, and it's interesting to talk about. Once you became Jackson Montgomery, did your life change as an actor? You know, you did a lot of work, but now being on there for such a long period of time, people discovered and saw you all over the place, right, Walt?
Absolutely. I mean, I never expected, Neil, that 25 years went by like 10. And I don't think any actor ever expects to be spending most of their career playing the same character. I don't think that's what any actor necessarily wants. And it's certainly not what we expect to do. We expect to go like gypsies from job to job, character to character. And that's frankly what I was looking forward to. But when you're a kid from the Midwest and you've got a good job like that, you don't quit a job like that. Well, the job quit me in 2011 when the show went off the air. And since then, I have to tell you, I've been doing so many different projects, things in my hometown of Ottawa, Illinois, on the road with the stand-up comedy, the Wild Willie Comedy Tour, on the road with Wild Bill. And, I think All My Children afforded me these many opportunities. I also think in some ways, you know, having been that character for so long on that show and being so identified with that character, I think it's also made for some hurdles. It's made for some brackets that people don't necessarily like to let you out of. But
typecasting in certain ways, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I mean, to being a working actor for that long is got to be fabulous. And when you got that gig and you knew you'd be on there for so long, it just was such a worthwhile thing to know you're working all the time. I mean,
I never really knew I was going to be on there that long. I went from you know, a 13-week contract, a 1-year contract, a 2-year contract, a 4-year contract, and you know, just about the time when I thought it might be a good idea to move on, that's about the time I started having children. And like I said, I'm not a big gambler. I didn't think it would be a good idea to walk away from such a great job just as I was bringing children into this world. And I guess I have some regrets about that, but regret just wastes a lot of time, so I try not to. My kids are almost all grown up now. I've got one left at home. And, in fact, my son, Chance, is an actor as well as a writer and painter and musician and many other things. He'll be joining me for the third year here in my theater in my hometown in Ottawa, Illinois. We're doing Auntie Mame this summer. And he'll be on stage with us. We did Death Trap last year, and he was in Arsenic and Old Lace, I guess, 4 years ago with us here. So, you know, one of the opportunities that I'm afforded by spending all that time on such an iconic show is that I get to do stuff like this. I get to get on stage with my son, which is, I can't tell you the value to that. It's just an amazing opportunity.
Well, to be able to put on that community play every year, I think finally you get to use your what sometimes things that we do in our art really makes it rewarding. I mean, to be able to be the creative person involved in this and to work with people that are aspiring actors and actresses, it must be so, so invaluable for you and such a great way to give back to all the success you've had, for sure.
Well, I have to kind of smile, Neil, when people talk about giving back. I guess it's that, but I also get quite a bit from it myself. I mean, we have an internship and mentorship program here, which, for instance, one of our members of that, she joined us. This will be her sixth year with us. She went from being in high school and working with us. Now she's stage manager at two very big regional houses here. But every summer she comes back and stage manages for us. My son was part of that internship and mentorship program. He started out working backstage with crew, you know, because I'm a firm believer that you don't just walk on the stage. You have to find out first about all the things that happen to make it possible for you to walk out on that stage. So, you know, and we always try to, you know, we have a charity arm to it where we have a not-for-profit associated with it that we, for our cast party every year, we book a cast party, and anybody can come, not just the cast. You have to pay to get in, and that money has gone to such things as the Pet Project and the South County Youth Services Bureau. We've raised money for Friendship Village, which is a concern here in town for the developmentally disabled. We raised money even for another local theater in a neighboring town, supposedly our rival theater, because they had a tornado go through. They had everything insured but their sign. So the very first year, we raised money so they could get their sign back up. And this is, I mean, Ottawa, Illinois is a lovely, lovely community. I've said it once, I'll say it again. You know, I think that anything I may or may not be at this point in my life, I can largely credit growing up in this town. It is a lovely town. It is a beautiful town on the junction of the Fox and Illinois Rivers, right by a beautiful state park called Starved Rock. If you're from Illinois and you're listening to this and you haven't been down to this part of the state, maybe an hour and a half south of Chicago, get in your car. This will be a good weekend to do it. In fact, it's just beautiful here. And there's such great community support for this that it is. It's just, I mean, it's a lot of work. It's more work than I've ever done in this business in 30 years. I produce everything. Of course, I'm on stage playing two roles this year. And it's a lot of work. But to see, and we very quickly become kind of a regional community theater. We have actors and, of course, patrons from all over Northern Illinois that come here to work with us. And so it's been quite a success. And I think that you're right, that you know, putting in the time on a show like All My Children now allows me to do stuff like this, and this has been
fabulous.
This has been a passion for me. Yeah,
you put that on your list. So you said you're not giving back, you're giving back yet, and doing all such great things for charities, and also mentoring young actors and actresses. But however, and aspiring actors and actresses, not just young, because anyone can be involved in this community play in some way if they have talent. What you've learned in this process is that this is more rewarding than some of your other experience as an actor. You finally are seeing a new thing, and this is something that you're truly passionate about. So for our listeners out there that aren't near where the local plays are, the community play that you produce and are involved in, where is that located in? Not located. What dates are your plays?
Well, this summer we're doing Anti-Mame, which is not the musical. It's the straight play that the musical is based on. It's the straight play that the movie, in fact, was based on. We're doing that July 25th, 26th, and 27th at the air-conditioned Ottawa High School Auditorium, which is probably, I mean, it's the de facto civic auditorium here. It's a 700-seater, beautiful, newly renovated, and we'll be there, like I say, July 25th, 26th, 27th. You know, people can they can reach out to experienceottawa.com, the Ottawa Visitor Center there that handles our ticketing for us, and they can reach them at 815-434-2737. And I think I even have a toll-free number. I'll get there for you in just a moment.
All right. Well, we definitely get that at the end of the show. What's really interesting of our interview, what's really interesting, again, as you said, it's a nice drive from Chicago. People would get to meet you and get to see a great, well-run play and all that stuff, and a great opportunity for sure to help give back. So people out there.
We also have, Neil, a guest artist every year. For the last 5 years, we've had somebody from All My Children, Jill Larson, who played Opal, Julia Barr, who played Brooke. We had Taylor in, who played Nina Cortland, Taylor Miller. Then we had Vincent DiRosari joined us for Harvey. Last year for Death Trap, Bobby Eats joined us. And this year we're going outside the All My Children family, and we're having probably one of our most accomplished guest artists, because she's been an actor in television, film, and on Broadway, Colleen Zenk, who played Barbara Ryan on As the World Turns for, I guess, over 30 years, 32 years, I think. She's also my castmate on the web series Thurston and on the web series Tainted Dreams, and that's how we met. It was interesting. You know, we were both doing a soap in New York. I'm sure we were in the same room many times at Emmys and Golden Globes and what have you, but we had never met until we started working on Tainted Dreams last fall. And we immediately liked each other. And in fact, it wasn't but just shortly after that, I was cast to play her husband on Thurston, the Western web series, which is an award-winning Western web series you can watch right on your computer, as you can with all web series. And she's doing it. She's also from Barrington, Illinois. So she's another home slice.
Oh, wow,
She's joining us this year, so we're very excited about that. She, you know, you saw her on Broadway in the sequel of Bye Bye Birdie called Bring Back Birdie. She was played opposite my good friend Tara Burnett and Albert Finney in the movie Annie. So she's quite an accomplished actress, and we're thrilled to death that she would take time out of her very busy schedule to join us here. So she'll be playing Vera, Anti-Mame's best friend. You know, you talked about aspiring actors. We had a really kind of an incredible success story here. We were joined our second year by someone, a local actress from a very small town around here, who had walked away from doing that as a career to raise four beautiful children, and she got kind of had her fires reignited, her passion reignited to do this, and she worked for us the first year as a stand-in. The third year when we did Plaza Suite, she played opposite me. She played opposite Vincent and me in Harvey, and this year for the first time we're giving the leading role two, what we think is an incredibly deserving local artist here, and Erica Quirk is her name, and she'll be playing Annie Mame. And to see her grow in the 4 years that she's been involved with us has been really just a real thrill to see somebody who possibly never thought they'd have the opportunity to do this, who had made a different choice in their life, and now all of a sudden they're carrying the show.
That's a great story.
She's on stage probably 80% of the play, and she's doing just a fabulous job. It's going to be—it's our biggest production ever. We've got special effects. The audience is even part of the show.
That's great. That's great.
I can say much more about that because I don't want to spoil the surprise, but. So it's been and you know, interestingly enough, this area here kind of spawned another project for me when my son and I were doing Arsenic and Old Lace here, I guess 4 years ago. We went over to pick up my wife and daughter at the local Amtrak station, which is in a little town called Mendota, Illinois. And as we were going there, we took kind of the back way, and we went through the little town of Troy Grove. And I come across this sign, Neil, that says, "Welcome to Troy Grove, Illinois, birthplace of James Butler, Wild Bill Hickok." And, you know, I grew up, this is 30 miles away, maybe less. And I grew up here, and to find out that Wild Bill Hickok and I were born in the same county came as a surprise to me. Now, I don't know how old a man you are, Neil, but I won't see 50 anytime soon again. And I know growing up, there was nothing but Westerns on television, practically. So for a while, Bill Hickok to be born in the same county as me, I guess I must have known it and just forgot it. But it was a real piece of serendipity because I just happened to be looking for a one-man show. I've been doing comedy out on the road a lot. I'd seen some one-man shows. I thought, gosh, I'd like to do that. But I'd read a lot of them. I didn't feel any more right for me. So I began to research Wild Bill Hickok, and I find out he was 6'2" and blonde hair and blue-eyed. And I thought, well, we're physically similar at least. And the more I researched him, the more once I got past the legend and got to the truth was even more fascinating than all the nonsense, all the dime novels that have been written about him and such. So I researched him for about a year, and it took me about another year to write the show. And in 2012, premiered it down in Florida. And the next month, did it for Wild Bill Hickok Day at his hometown here. And I've been touring with that show since. People love the show. It's gotten great reviews. It's the first show I'd ever written.
That's a great story.
And again, that was kind of born from, growing up in this area and being back in it. So lots of good stuff here.
You're definitely continuing acting and enjoying your career and enjoying life after the soap for sure. Also, I understand you're involved in an in-school program. Can you explain that to me?
Yes, I wished always that I had had, and Ottawa High School was and is a very good school, but I wish that I had had a better understanding that I, too, could go and do this. I didn't get in this business until I was almost 30 years old. I wish I'd started younger. Maybe not. Maybe it was good I waited to start when I was a little older. But so I've always been interested in how to do what I do and fold it into some kind of an educational opportunity. So what I do is I will go to a high school. I've done this all over the United States at this point now. And I'll go to a high school. They'll have me come in on, let's say, a Tuesday. And on Wednesday and Thursday, either during class hours or after class hours, I will do seminars, hold master classes, do private coaching for their performance arts students, lectures, whatever really the faculty and administration thinks is appropriate. And then a student crew and I will put Wild Bill and either with James Butler Hickok up across the weekend, and a portion of the proceeds go to the school's theater department or drama department or performing arts department, however it's set up differently at different schools. So they have the opportunity of classes with someone who's been doing this for 30 years. They have the opportunity of working crew and light, sound, set building. There's not much of a set to it. It's pretty simple. And then, of course, they call the show. They run the sound cues and light cues. And at the same time, they're raising money for their theater department. So it's turned out to be quite a mutually beneficial thing. And I enjoy it thoroughly. There's really nothing I think I enjoy any more than either students, young people wanting to know more and perfect their craft and move toward doing
That's
it.
Great.
As a profession, or even as an avocation, you know.
Walt, you're giving back a ton.
It's a mutually beneficial thing. I got a day after day of teaching and building staff and running queues, and after a 12-hour day of that, I just feel great. I just feel like it's they're giving back to me too. I mean, so
you're doing a tremendous job for sure.
Not totally selfish.
Definitely tremendous job. So, Walt, where can we find information on you first of all, and then if you have a toll-free number again for the tickets for the late July performances and also all the other projects, where can we go?
Well, the best place to go for everything in my in Walt Willie World, as we call it, would be to go to waltwillieworld.com. It's my website, run with me by my good friend Bonnie Vent, who actually set this interview up for us. And that would be the place to go for just everything. I guess of course, you can follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. On Twitter, it's at